All right, let's get the National Hour going here on The Real Kipper and the Bourne Show. The Kipperos, Justin Bourne, in studio. Special guest, Jason Buchla. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365, seen on Sportsnet. Also heard on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. Books, what's going on? So, you know, we got 3 months off. Am I going to make you jealous right now?
Yeah, please
three
do.
3 months off. Yeah. As still a lot of scouting in your blood.
Yes.
Didn't really change this summer for you, did it?
There's no offseason anymore, fellas. No. Doesn't seem like there is. Like, I mean, you come out of the draft, you get into free agency, you go to development camps. You know, I obviously didn't do that, but, you know, Hlinka, Gretzky, Kip, you and I over coffee there earlier, you know. Yeah. You go to Edmonton in August for the Hlinka, which is the official start of the amateur scouting calendar for next year's draft. And then before you know it, here we are again, you know, and training camps, rookie games, rookie tournaments, all that kind of stuff. So it's changed a lot. Like, since I started in Nashville in the early 2000s, you know, mid 2006, whatever it was, it's changed a lot. We used to have an off season, you know, a couple months in there, play golf, you know, go to the cottage. Not so much anymore.
The Hlinka is kind of where it all starts, is it? And so when you go to these sort of events, is it all the same people? Like, you know, you've been a part of the scouting community now for a long time. Is it kind of like the first day of school?
It kind of is. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And, you know, you can see some of the guys who've been kind to their bodies for the first month of the off season and other guys who haven't.
Right.
And all that kind of stuff. But yeah, no, it's that right there. Like, there's a lot of GMs that are there. Everybody, it's almost like everybody kind of wants to reconvene a little bit too. Right. I have to say this. I love going to Edmonton to scout hockey. Edmonton's a Canadian city. I get it. But Bratislava usually hosts that every other year there in Slovakia. Yeah. And that's a fantastic area of the world if you ever get a chance. Yeah. So it's going back there next year. I'm already looking forward to it a little bit more than I did Edmonton.
There you go. Fair enough.
Yeah. We're talking to Jason Buchla, former NHL scout, Sportsnet hockey analyst, and the Pro Hockey Group. So a lot of discussion, Books, over training camp, seeing guys get hurt, stars on the ice against minor leaguers, some getting hurt. So, like, as a former scout, like, where was the value of you watching or assessing a preseason game when you watch nothing on the line yet? You know, sometimes you could have a group of rookies, which we've seen on occasion already, like, show up, play hard, and then the group that you think that should run over a team 11-0 with veterans end up losing. Attention to detail. Like, how much stock did you as a scout put into watching these games?
It was literally all over the map. I have to be truthful about it. So we would sometimes, well, first of all, as you guys know, some veteran guys, they want to get so many reps in, mm-hmm. right? And it's not that they're going to be full bore necessarily, which I think is actually a dangerous thing. Like, when you're not playing the game to your full capacity, that's when silly things seem to happen, or, you know, injury-wise. But some guys wanted to get so many reps in. I can recall when I was working for Dale Talon in Florida, and there was a Detroit Red Wing who was going to go on the waiver wire. But we had some interest in him. It was, I don't mind telling you, it was Jacob Kindle, the defenseman, okay?
Yep.
It's a long time ago. And, you know, so I went down to Chicago. I live in London. Dale says, can you go to Chicago tonight and see this, you know, Kindle, because they're going to put him on waivers. Something's going to happen. And do you think he's worth a late-round pick? So there's where you're conflicted, right? Because you go to a game and it's half veteran guys, yeah. Eight guys, right? Yeah, it's full in Chicago, but it doesn't matter. And Kindle's a defenseman for Detroit. So am I going to get him under duress the way I would normally get at that time with the Chicago Blackhawks? Obviously not. So it's delicate. Like, you gotta, you know, for veteran guys or semi-veteran guys, or even guys that are kind of getting into that 22, 23-year-old mold, you know, like Robertson here, for example, I guarantee teams have been heavily scouting Robertson through the preseason. Yeah. Guarantee it. So I don't know. It's, I will say this. I'm very concerned about the amount of injuries that are taking place in preseason. You know, I think that we're almost getting to the stage we have to be like the National Football League and, you know, play a game a week, and, you know, you're only rolling your good guys out there once in a while.
Right. Yeah, you could save some injuries just by having Arbor Jacki play less. But just one suggestion might be one of the ideas. So we're going to get to – we want to go across Canada a little bit and ask you about some of the prospects. Obviously, your specialty for what's going on for some of these Canadian teams. So I guess I'll start with the Canucks because you mentioned an interesting name there, Atu Ratu. You've liked him so far?
I have, yeah. It's been an interesting journey for this kid. So in his draft cycle several years ago, because he's 21 now, I guess, he was going to be potentially a top 10 pick. Mm. You know, he got draftitis, as I like to call it. You know, some guys just kind of, they just don't, they're not the best version of themselves for whatever reason sometimes in their draft year. And it's been a little bit of a slow burn. His wheels, he's part of the Bo Horvat trade, okay? Yep. So the Islanders draft him in the second round. He's what's left over in that Horvat trade to the island from Vancouver. And, you know, it's been a slow burn for him to get to. He had a real nice year last year in Abbotsford. I think it was right around point of game. His wheels have been average, average plus, okay? Mm-hmm. Now what he's done is I would say he's improved maybe 10% somehow, some way. Maybe it's training, you know, biomechanics, you know, his fitness is different, better, whatever the case may be. He's getting from A to B quicker, especially in small areas. But you know what he really does, guys? He's got a B game now, mm-hmm. okay? So it's not going to be at the bottom of the lineup where you need him to score 12 or 15. That would be a bonus, right? But the fact of the matter is that he's extending plays. He's leaning on people, hash marks down, hard to play against, those types of things. That, obviously, with the way that they're trying to play there, especially looking for that type of breed in the bottom of their lineup, that's good for the Canucks. And, you know, if he pairs up, let's say he's on the road, and he pairs up against a second-pairing D, okay, and all he does is bodies him three times, makes life miserable on him, and then the next time that that D comes out, that D's run up against, you know, one of the Canucks' top six units, he's a lesser version of himself now, isn't he? Mm-hmm. So that's the role I see him playing there. He's been very impressive.
DeBrusque with yes. Pettersson. You like it? You like that chemistry, that or that potential for chemistry?
Yeah, interesting. Time will tell, I guess. I'm on the fence with it. I don't know what DeBrusque's ceiling is necessarily offensively. Like, could he be better than what he was in Boston? Like, he always gave me the impression that he should be, you know, a 65-point guy, you know, almost all the time. Like, when he's playing at the top of his game. For whatever reason, if you look at his statistics in Boston, it was kind of like, you know, and there was some noise there, too, at one point. Remember, he kind of wanted out of there and stuff like that. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. I see the reason why they're doing it. Long-term contract, you know, the new guy on the scene. He's got to play top six. We'll see how it goes. I'm looking for him, though, definitely to be, you know, north of 60 points there and compliment Pettersson in a better way.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, how do you feel about quick judgments on drafts or looking at like, oh, they passed over this guy when they could have had this guy? Because right now, sitting here this morning, Montreal didn't take Matvei Michkov, and he's looking pretty good in Philly, and Reinbacher gets hurt early, and it looks like it's already decided, right? Like, oh, they should have taken Michkov. But how do you feel when you hear people like pundits talking about what they should have done in a draft this shortly after it?
I don't like it at all. It drives me crazy, you know, for the fraternity especially, because they've been out there and they work so hard to listen. There's a plan in place. Like Reinbacher that year, two things. Michkov wanted to be a Philadelphia Flyer. Okay.
Right?
Yeah. He wanted to be a Philadelphia Flyer. It was, you know, it kind of came out through, you heard a lot of noise, but through the periphery, it was like, he really wants to be in Philadelphia, or at least in that area, mm-hmm. you know, let's call it the Metro, the New York region. Let's just call it for that for argument's sake. And so teams were already weary of, is he going to come? You know, so if you draft him ahead of the eighth slot, he went eighth, right? If you draft him ahead of that, is he going to come? You know, what are we going to get ourselves into here? And don't forget, like, in hindsight being what it is, the hockey guys have talked on two teams relatively well here because Cutter Gauthier didn't want to be a Philadelphia Flyer. Michkov wants to be a Philadelphia Flyer. Pretty good, right? You know, you swap that out. Yeah. Demidov ends up a Montreal Canadian this year. For me, he was the second best player in the draft. Okay.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Second best player in the draft. And he ends up a Montreal Canadian this year. So to your Reinbacher point, like, you know, it's funny how it all comes full circle. Reinbacher's a hell of a player. That was a freak injury, you know, Montreal, knock on wood, like Kirby Dach last year, like freak injuries. And but he's a hell of a player and very smart, very talented, can quarterback a second unit power play in time, but big bodied, who moves very well. And it's just gonna take time with guys like that. So yeah, I don't love it when it's judged too early.
Takes
for sure.
Time, man.
Yeah.
Kind of conversations is it today when it comes to like two players being close, and then one maybe from Russia, and as a scouting staff or management staff, you're like, don't want to deal with Russia, don't want to deal with releases, don't want to negotiate prices, don't want that headache.
Right?
Is that more prevalent
I don't
than
think
ever?
It's the same for every team. And I'll present it this way, actually three different ways. I still think that there's some teams in the league who are shying away from drafting a Russian, period. And I'm not even just talking for hockey reasons. I'm talking geopolitical. The owner has a slant on something. Mm-hmm. I think that actually does exist in the league. The second thing that I will say is that the risk, you know, is the reward. Are we going to get the player? How are we going to manage the asset? That's absolutely a concern. But the third thing I would say is this. I'm not so sure that the U.S. National Team Development Player Program and their players, their high-end guys that are coming out of there, aren't becoming, I think the Russians are getting less risky and the U.S. national team development players who are really, really good going to college are getting more risky to a degree. It really? Seems like a couple, yeah.
Why is that?
Well, I don't know. Like Gauthier decided he didn't, you know, want to become a Philadelphia Flyer for whatever the reason is. Rucker McGroarty. You know, you could say the Winnipeg thing, but, you know, like Kip back in the day, the NHL, it's like the Augusta National, right? You know, if you're asked to be a member of the club, go play the game.
Anywhere.
Go play the game. There's 32 teams in the best league in the world. I don't care where it is. I know for my kid, if he's going to be a hockey player, you don't get to pick where you play in the best league in the world. So if that happened, I don't know. No one's come out and told me that specifically. But
we've had this discussion before. Like they're like much different rules from drafting in the CHL or the NCAA.
Absolutely.
Like all of a sudden these NCAA kids are going, well, wait a second, I can be a free agent a lot faster now, and why wouldn't I exercise that muscle?
Oh, and I'll tell you, you don't want a high-end college player that you've selected. I don't care where you've selected him, because let's just say he's a third-rounder, but he hits. Like, he's really good. Well, look at us with Florida back in the day, Zach Hyman. He's a sixth-round pick to us in Florida, okay? His first 3 years at the University of Michigan, he scores like 19 goals in 3 years. His last year, he looked like he looks today in the National Hockey League. He's in his senior year.
Right.
So he's walking us to water saying he's going to sign with the Florida Panthers until he doesn't, right? So if you have a talent at the college level and he's getting into year three and he isn't signing with you, I'm looking at my general manager and saying, we better manage this very, very closely because I don't think he's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not put all the control in his, you know, notebook, if you will.
Right.
Let's take back some control there.
So I don't mean to put you on the spot with this, but like things are really changing with development leagues and what players can do. I mean, what are your thoughts? I know it's a pretty general question, but you look at these guys who could play major junior and then play college.
Yeah.
Is that good for our game or?
Oh,
I know that's a really broad question. Is there something in there in particular that stands out to you that will change?
And has anything changed? Just to add, JB, has anything changed between the last time we had a conversation with where the NCAA is and these players now, like, is it going to get challenged now if a CHL player wants to end his amateur career with a school down in the States?
We're starting to see it, aren't we? Forget the name of the player committed. Arizona State, right? I think in the perfect world, for everything to align the way that the NHL wants it to align, and I'm talking about development fees, I'm talking about timelines, you know, like right now, if we draft a European, he's on the clock for 4 years of development, right? If we draft a CHL kid, 2 years and you got to make a decision on him. Right. You know, an NCAA player, we're talking about that being in flux, right? Technically, 2 years, he could come out after 1 year, you know, and that happens, obviously. I think ideally, the league would like the CBA and all of this change in NCAA hockey to kind of hit the ground running at the same time because it's going to be a CBA notation, isn't it? You know, what's the development fee? What's the, if a kid doesn't come, do we get a compensatory pick out of that? There's always going to be all these moving parts. Do I think it's good? I think that anytime that you can offer up the opportunity for any kid, they all develop it on their own timelines, right? So I think that anytime you can open up the landscape to as much competition as possible to get the best product, I think that's good for the game. How it planes out in the long run, not so sure, because the USHL is a juggernaut in the States. It's a big business. There's a lot of great centers there. Is there going to be less USHL players going to play in big-time schools? But having said that, if you go to like a Lake State, let's just say up in Sault Ste. Marie, they will benefit from the older CHL player.
Sure. Did you have a chance to play in the USHL? It was a nothing burger for you?
Yeah, when I played in the BCHL, the USHL was just starting, and it was kind of a laugher. You know, it was kind of like one of those four-letter SPHL or whatever below that, whatever league it was. It wasn't what it is now, which is
more players are being drafted out of the USHL than the
big
CHL
business.
Now?
Big business. Well, no, not out of the CHL. Not comparatively. Like, well, here's how they position it, though. They position a college player who played in Dubuque as a USHL player still, which is like you and I saying that Easton Cowan played for the Kamoka Kings in Junior B, and he's a Kamoka King. I mean, that doesn't make any sense, right? So you can spin it any way you want.
Right. So will NIL have anything, any input on this? You know, the ability for kids to go to college and get paid if you're a star versus going the CHL route?
That's going to be fascinating.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like it's hot.
And where does it land? So that's a great point. So if you're a high-end guy, let's just be crazy here for a second. Think back to Connor McDavid's draft year.
Yeah.
Instead of him playing for the Erie Otters, okay, he's at the University of Michigan. And guess what? He's making $1 million on nil. Right? You know what I mean?
Still developing and getting paid in the process.
Yeah, and playing 42 games or whatever he's playing, right? Twice on the weekends or whatever. Maybe not necessarily the best idea for the player, but you can certainly see the strategy from where you sit, right?
It's a negotiating ploy.
It's going to be, so I'm fascinated to see where that goes, because right now in the OHL, I remember back to my Sault Ste. Marie Greyhound days a long, long time ago, we always had those players who were like, you'd be looking at a Toronto Marley kid, right? No, I'm going to go play college hockey. I'm going to go play in Michigan. And then, you know, we don't draft him in Sault Ste. Marie. And then we show up in Kitchener on a Friday night and he's playing for the Kitchener Rangers. Yeah. You know what I mean? So there's going to be some tactics involved.
Edmonton, Winnipeg, Calgary, pick your poison on...
Not a lot of room for prospects in Edmonton. You know, obviously what happened in the offseason with the offer sheet situation, it doesn't move the needle much in terms of prospects entering into that equation there. Savoy trade from Buffalo was curious for me to go to Edmonton. He needs time in the American League to apply his trade for the type of player he is. Edmonton is going to be a juggernaut in my estimation.
Were you surprised that ego didn't take over the decision to keep the Edmonton players out of St. Louis? Because that's what usually happens. How dare you? You're not going to get...
Yeah.
You're not taking my players.
Money. It's money. It's salary cap, exposure.
So shouldn't we see more of this then?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you want to look at how the St. Louis Blues position it, like how Army position it, you know, this is business, you know? I do this to my mother, I think, is what his quote was, right? Yeah, absolutely. You should see it. If you've got the flexibility, like why would you have to wait? I'll give you an example. I'm Utah and I come from Arizona. All of a sudden I have an owner who's willing to spend to the cap. Okay. Where we've been, let's be honest, a lot of bad contracts have been landing there for several years. Yeah. So now it's the exact flip side of that. And if you've got the room, why wouldn't you? I want to get good sooner than later, you know, for a couple of reasons.
Absolutely.
A, because we want our city to embrace us, but also those guys who've been, you know, going through the tough days with us in Arizona, let's reward them with as good a team. So, yeah, I think that, you know, it should be out there. But it's, I mean, as long as there's those teams that are spending, you know, a lot of money at the top of their lineups, especially to get to the ceiling of the cap or close to LT to start years like that, it's going to be, they're going to expose themselves even more.
Yeah. You know, while we're trying to go around Canada and touch on each team, Kip and I did a preseason game. Actually, I think you missed the first one where Carter Yakimchuk, the Ottawa Senators young D-man, split the D, scores a OT winner. Tell me about this kid. Scored 30 in junior. Yeah. Like, how soon can he be an impactful NHLer?
So the interesting thing about Carter, he's a late birthday, and he required, there's an example of a kid who needed an extra year to grow into his frame. You know, he got tall and whatever. I love his mechanics on straight lines. I think there's no issues there at all. You saw that in that exhibition.
Yeah,
he split the D and went in and whatever. He's got the offensive brain. He can shoot it from distance, beat goalies from distance too, weak side on the power play, for example. He's got bite too. 120 PIMs in the dub, okay? Yeah. The dub might not be the dub of 25 years ago, but 120 PIMs, when you play 25 minutes a night, that's a lot of time in the box, right? So I think that he's got an A game and a B game. I think he's going to be able to do a lot of different things. It's just going to come down to timing, you know, like getting that small area. You know, guys are quicker, stronger. They body up a little bit differently. So it'll take time. But, you know, I think he gets 9 games for sure, and we'll see how it goes. Yeah, I really do believe that. Their preseason tournament in Buffalo was a tire fire. I don't know if you guys saw that or not. Ottawa was 0-3. They scored 4 and allowed 17. And people were coming out of there looking at their prospect pool saying, oh, you know.
Yeah.
But Yakimchuk's gone to a different level since he arrived with the big guys.
So I am coming into this season thinking that this season may kind of mirror last season's in terms of where we see the pecking order going into the playoffs again. So, but there's so much more pressure on the likes of the team that you just mentioned, Ottawa, yep. Buffalo, Detroit. I'm still kind of not sure where Montreal is, if it's just another year that they miss the playoffs and they just get the play. Okay. All right. So, but there's a ton of pressure on Adams, I think, Stevie Heisman, to get this team over the hump. And, you know, with Ottawa, like Ann Lauer just spent another $100 million, I think, to take a percentage of the team. He's got to get into the playoffs.
Like, yeah, they lost money last year.
Where do you see one team stepping up or no? I mean, they can knock on the door, but Montreal and Ottawa, they were like 18 points out of a playoff spot. That's not like...
Sens fans like the Sens this year. They think they're getting in. Elliott picked them.
That's not just not missing. That's missing.
That's 9 games behind in the American League East. Let's be honest. So that's not just missing, right?
Can Ottawa make up that many points?
I am hoping they do. I really, because for the good of the franchise and all the good news about the new owner and different things, and obviously, hopefully a shovel going in the ground at some point for the new rink on the flats, all these positive things behind the scenes. I just don't know, other than Washington, who falls out. That's where I'm struggling. You know, so, you know, they have to get off to a good start, guys. Their starts, like that, for, you know, we always talk about Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. if you're here. For me, teams like Ottawa, Buffalo actually generally gets off to good starts and then something goes terribly wrong. Right. But like Ottawa's got to be 7-3 out of the gates. Like they can't be chasing points.
They're always chasing, and then they get hot at the end of the year and ruin their draft pick.
So yeah. Yeah. It's backwards. You got to figure it out. Hopefully they're a year older, a year better prepared. They got Allmark and goal. You know, comes up with some big saves. I'd run that guy out for every game like to start the first 10 or so. I got to do what I got to do here. I will say this, though, about Linus Allmark. As great as his stats were and how good he's been, if you want to watch tape on Linus Allmark, there are some nights that he looks like Joey, your next-door neighbor, playing road hockey. Like, he's diving his chest out of a box. It looks very unorthodox. It works in Boston because you might only have to make one save.
Right.
When you're with a developing group, you might have to regroup and make a second save. And we'll see how that goes.
Just staying on the goaltending, I'd love your thoughts on the Boston Bruins handling Jeremy Swayman and whether or not they should have found a way to hold on to Allmark just in case they had some issues. Where do you see Swayman by December 1st?
I see him in Boston. I do see him in Boston. I'm fascinated, though, by the process that has occurred here. I don't understand, when you're trading Allmark and you have to re-sign the other guy, I don't know where, like, did we not talk to each other in the lead up to some of these transactions? Like, did we not get a feel for each other of where we're going with things? Like, you would have thought, in my mind, that would have happened already.
Have a deal in place before you trade Allmark.
You have to have some sort of a plan in place. And then all this other noise that follows it after that. I think he ends up in Boston, and I think it's in spite of upper management. I think that whenever you take a player to arbitration and they hear all the bad things about themselves from the other side, when they've been given the best version of themselves, that's a tough... Like, these guys... They don't like to hear that. Nobody does, but a lot of pro athletes have been the best of the best every step of the way. Mm-hmm. They haven't got a lot of negatives, so they don't like to hear that especially. I'm fascinated by it. I'm disappointed by it. I think he comes back for the good of the group. I think there's a culture there, and he's going to, at the end of the day, be in for that. 8 years old, that's going to be curious to me.
It's a lot of years.
But there's a bit of a precedent now with general managers hedging here on second contracts, and Slafkovský, of course, struggled out of the gate, found his footing, boom, 8-year deal. Mm-hmm. So it's like
Robert Thomas in St. Louis.
I get Swayman's 25 and he's only played like 130 games or whatever, but like pretty good goalie, and he's in the ballpark of all the rest of them making 8.5 or 9. Like, What's the big deal here?
For me, from the management side, 20 games. Because Connor Hellebuck's going to roll out and play. So when you start throwing out numbers that I should be making what Vasilevsky makes or what Hellebuck makes and all this, okay? And they're rolling out there for...
And it's not apples to apples. It's percentages of what the cap's available. The cap could be $100 million tomorrow if they just decide to really use real revenue coming in. But they've artificially slowed it down.
Yeah.
And the thing can boom to $100 million like that very soon, and that's new money coming into the system to get the same percentage that you had back then. It's not because it's Vasilevsky's number, you deserve more than Vasilevsky. It's like today's money.
Yeah, so that's where it's at, though. Like, it goes whatever Vasilevsky was at 9.5 compared to the percentage at that time, now you start to back it out, and if the percentage right now of the athlete is saying that I deserve this money, and I take, well, here's something that's interesting. Yeah. Didn't the league just come out and say that next year might go to 92.5?
Yeah.
Okay, so 92.5, and he isn't signed. So now he knows that at 8, if that's what the number is, yeah, 8 million, this is my percentage at 8. Mm-hmm. But I was negotiating previously to that on the old number at 88, right? So now I should be 8.5, 8.75, whatever the case may be, right? 9, let's say 9 million. Okay. And it'll still age well if he hits. That'll still age well.
Yeah, it will.
Right? But I mean, that whole process is fascinating. Maybe this is going to be a new precedent. You know, this holdout guy who is going to listen at Arb and all that other, and then he's just going to wait for that salary cap number to come up before he signs a new deal. I'm with you, Kipper. I mean, it is in relation to the percentage, but that's where I come back to the games played, though, too. I have to factor that in because it's not like the Grant Fuhr days when Mike Keenan rolls him out for 75 games, okay? Ones in the league now are between 60 and 64 games. I think I'm doing this off the top of my head.
Yeah,
I bet
high.
You that's pretty high, right?
Yeah.
So when you're in your 40s, you know, you haven't shown me yet. You know, it's like in Toronto here. Like, things could go really well, but both these guys, and you have, you know, whatever happens, Murray, whatever, but we're talking guys that play like 30 games a year.
Right.
Okay, so that matters to me in the process, outside of the percentages.
Yeah, makes sense to me. As you say, everyone wants the, like, Jack Hughes thing where you've given a guy eight times eight was his contract or something. Now he's going to make $8 million a year, scoring 130 points. Everyone's trying to do that. And I don't blame guys for locking up the value, but I think more NHLers should look at the NBA thing and, if they believe in themselves, sign for 3 years, 4 years. You know, like, yeah, Austin Matthews, basically the only guy who does it right now.
But you got to have a team willing to say, we'll accept you at that number, and everyone else is jamming 8 years. They're not dumb. Like, I want to know for the eight years you're locked in. If it's going to come lower.
Unless it's Matthews, though, unless it's one of the top five guys in the league, 8 years a long time to commit to someone. Well, like, I'm okay with committing to 5 years as a team. Let's make sure we like you, too.
You guys not think it's situational, though? So New Jersey's in a cycle when they sign him to that deal, right? Mm-hmm. Which it's kind of like Quinn Hughes, even. Like, when you sign these guys to deals, depending on where your team's in the cycle, that number of eight, you know, they're putting you up against the other guys on your roster and all that kind of things and how they're building out their team. Now the kid, the player, says, I'm satisfied with that number. I'll sign for eight. Unless you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, where Matthews was afforded, like, the tea leaves look like we're going to get pretty good. On paper, like, regular season good at the very least, right? So now it's like, I'll bet on myself a little bit differently because, you know, it works the way our team is here.
Right.
They're going to do it. The Leafs are, because they just are. Yeah. They're going to do it. They're not going to risk, you know, him not playing. So I think it depends on the team, depends on the situation. And you know what? It depends also on location. You can never forget that, right? Like, you know, there's some teams in this league that the league might not want to hear it, but there's some tax havens in this league, and that matters too to some of those players in those markets. They'll leave a schmill on the table. Alexander Barkov makes 10. Is that going to age well? Like, obviously it's going to age well, right?
Okay. But it's like 12 in Toronto or New York.
At least.
I was speaking to an agent. He said that if he played in New York, I don't know what the cost of living was when you played for the Rangers, but he said if that guy was playing in New York, it was $13 million a year that Barkov would have to get paid in New York.
Right.
To
keep the same amount of money.
To keep the same amount.
I got traded in
1993
from Hartford to New York. 1993. My rent
went up.
My rent in Hartford was $235. And then I go, hey, Mess, how much do you need to rent in in New York City. He says, you can find a decent place for like $3,000.
Yeah. I'm like, I turned into Cliff Clavin talking to girls. How much?
That's brutal.
What You're looking for a roommate at like, that point. Yeah.
What if I
did
room?
You have a roommate in New York?
Seven of them. Just to bring the rent down.
Yeah, smart.
All right. Well, listen, great stuff as always, man.
Thanks,
really
thanks,
appreciate
Bruce.
It.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, always nice to have a head scout tell you the way it is. Well,
thanks
Don't
for
Don't be a stranger
me.
Around here, man, okay?
Well, I was only in here to see Deb Berman, yep. You know, like the great Deb. And yep. Hillary, you know, I didn't see her today, but she would normally make me look even better. But well, that's the only reason wonderful. I was here, but I'm glad to see you guys. Thanks for having
thanks
me.
Thanks for coming. Appreciate all right. it. Appreciate it.
Take a quick break, yes. And we'll trade in Books for Sammy. Is that even up, or is that like do
We're
we
need,
we need a lot more
futures,
cash? Can you still get cash in a deal? More Real Kipper and Bourne after the break.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming down the stretch here on day two, the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. This hour, Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. We've got NHL notes, but before that, Sammy, welcome back to the program. Little game time.
Thanks, man. Yeah, feeling after Books there, I'm like, he should just be the third guy.
Books produced.
He's really good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, he can chew the fat, man.
Oh, yeah.
He could talk.
You're welcome here anytime. Give to Gab.
He could talk a pit bull off a meat wagon.
I believe he could.
It's game time. Presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Now, what I'm doing today, another big picture one, the Hart Trophy favorites. You can probably guess who the number one favorite is, I would imagine. His name's Connor McDavid.
David McConnor.
Pretty good. Plus 150. To be the MVP, the Hart Trophy winner in the NHL.
You're basically betting, does he get hurt or not?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
He's healthy, he wins.
Or, I mean, he could have won it last year, too. Probably should have won it last year. I mean, it's a narrative thing. It's like LeBron. LeBron could have been the MVP every single year, but there's writers and people who watch the league want to have someone different.
Want to make sure everyone gets one who's good.
The next favorite is Nathan MacKinnon at 6-1 plus 600. Austin Matthews. At plus 850, Jack Hughes plus 1100, Nikita Kucherov plus 1800, and the last one I'll say is Draisaitl at plus 2000, 20-1.
You know, any of those jump out we're missing? We're missing one there.
Mm.
Kale McCarr.
But
do you want me to look up his number for you?
It's just very rare that a defenseman can win this trophy.
It is rare,
over
but
historically speaking.
But I believe that he's
the last one is
better
Pronger?
Enough.
Pronger
is the last one. Pronger.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Doughty, no.
No?
Yep.
I skated with Pronger.
You did?
Month ago.
You survive?
So it was a charity event in Brampton.
Mm.
And, he hasn't skated in 7 years.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
7 years.
I'm getting up there.
He came
out. 3 years.
He came out. I don't even know if he borrowed equipment or whatever, but, and he kind of still intimidated me out there.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I knew maybe I was going to get a stick over the head at any time.
Well, I don't think Kale McCarr would do that. But
Kale
I do
McCarr
think that Kale McCarr
is plus 2,500, 25-1 for Kale McCarr.
He's just that age where he could have like a 95-point season, and with the rest of his game, he's different enough to me that he's worth a flyer.
Did you mention Kucherov?
I didn't mention Kucherov.
16,
no, did I say? Did. No, I did say. Did. He's plus 1,800.
18-1. Okay. Yeah. All right.
He sneaks in the 140-point season.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He's so good.
He is nasty.
He's so good.
Yeah, he really is. And he's just, the All-Star Game performance last year was all-time stuff in that skills thing where he
That's
stopped
funny.
Trying.
I like him. I like Kucherov, but I am a little bit, his actions sometimes do not please me.
And just to confirm, the last defenseman to win the Hart Trophy was indeed Chris Pronger. In the year 2000. So it's been a long time since a defenseman has won the Hart Trophy. So there you go. That was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
All right, how much did you catch out of that nastiness against the Montreal Canadiens and the Ottawa Senators?
I watched that.
For the second consecutive game there, that Jack Hyde is can somebody remind him that, like, it hasn't really started? You don't have, like, he was reactive to that hit. Like, there's no question
that. You think that was tied to the Greg hit?
Yeah, 100%. That one had message sending written all over it for me.
So I am 100% sure the league looked at that play and said, that's a stick that hits Stützle, right? It's his own stick. He hits Stützle's gloves, and he hits himself with the stick.
Is that enough to say?
No, they should still suspend him. It's like if you drive recklessly all over the road and someone swerves to get out of the way and crashes, it's like you still caused the crash. You know, I definitely feel like that's a... They just need to do, it's like Rempy. It was like, someone just pour cold water on this guy and just like, he's going to hurt someone playing like this. It's preseason.
Everybody's like, whoa, it was the stick that cut him. That didn't excuse the flying elbow when the puck was on the sideboards.
Yes.
So, I don't know. Like, to me, I'll get your thoughts on this, but you can't have it if you're the NHL. I'm not necessarily, this is my youth. This is what I grew up watching. That hit happened every night when I used to watch hockey when I was a kid and in my 20s and my teens. That was all the time.
Yeah.
But, like, the NHL wants to not have that anymore, right? Like, they want to get rid of that. But, like,
if they
want
to protect your stars,
do they know?
The NFL protects their quarterbacks because they're the stars. Can we not protect Timmy Stew?
The perception is they may want it out of the game, but they just prove they don't.
They don't care. He went flying through the middle of the ice, flying elbow on a star player in a meaningless preseason game, and he didn't even get a fine.
You know what kills
me? After beating a guy mercilessly the game before.
You know what kills me is, I think at the start of the year, you'd like to send the message to the rest of the league, we're watching. Best behavior here, boys.
But to me, it's a no-brainer.
The next two games, they play Ottawa and Toronto again.
Listen,
who wants him in those games?
And if you really want to send him, like, nothing would hurt a player worse than missing your season opening game. That's the game you want. You know, like that.
You
that
can even
one
let him
stings.
Play that though.
Just, that one stings.
Just saying, you can't play in the next two preseason.
Exactly.
You know,
no,
what's the harm?
No. Bigger message.
Into the regular season?
He shouldn't be in the lineup Wednesday.
Yeah. I mean, he is
so you think
operating
he's,
dangerously out there.
So three-game suspension, two preseason, one preseason,
I don't
would you think?
About the preseason.
The preseason games are worth half a game each.
But then he gets to play in the two preseason games against the rivals and then play opening night?
It's not. Listen, I don't care about preseason.
Neither do I.
I don't even
But mention, he does, obviously.
But, hey, so
he
can't play in those games
He can't
now.
Play in those, and he can't play in the opening game.
He wants to.
I don't even count those.
But, like, now is Ryan Reeves going to fight him next game? Is, you know, who is it on Ottawa? Who's it going to be? Someone going to go fight McEwen or someone? Like, are we going to have a hullabaloo?
Like, I'm watching it last night, and then I'm thinking he's going to get a game, and there's nothing there. And I'm like, the whole hockey world's confused right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what's suspendable and what's not.
Well, these guys will say it's letter of the law. They'll say he did not hit him in the head. What do you want me to suspend him for? He didn't hit his head. He hit his hands, and then the guy hit himself.
You can't
suspend. It's attempted murder.
You can't suspend for intent. You can suspend for results.
Yeah. What happened?
Is that what it is?
That's absolutely. If we had them on the show right now, they would say he didn't hit him in the head. What do you want me to do?
And Ridly Greggs was pretty greasy, too.
It was greasy. Very greasy hit.
It was not as greasy, but what in the same later, conversation.
What did Morgan end up getting? Five
six.
Games?
Five.
Six,
yeah, five.
Six reduced.
Was it?
I think it was five. Okay. Maybe six reduced to five?
I think it was reduced. Mm. 5-4 or 6-5. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, and that wasn't as vicious of a beating than what Jack I did
that one is
last
pretty
week.
Clearly a suspension.
Right?
It's like when you throw three or four punches at an unwilling combatant, that's one thing. But the seventh or eighth is like, all right.
So, you guys think the punching was worse than the hit last night?
I just think that technically it's hard to suspend a guy when the contact wasn't there.
When I saw that clip and the broadcast, you know, Mike Johnson's like, oh my, like it
immediately
was,
knew. He's like, he's out of the game.
That to me, I was like, oh my God, he's definitely getting suspended. Like I was more sure of him getting suspended for that than the punching.
But and they got out the microscope and went, technically.
Like,
Listen, I'm as old school as anyone, but you have to, you gotta kind of square up and give a guy a chance to say, okay, I'm fighting you now.
Yeah.
And that one just escalated to, you know, I'm gonna Bertuzzi you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we can't have that today.
Yeah.
No.
So either way, he'll be emboldened, I think. I think Arbor Jacki is going to be Matt Rempe, not even light, just another Matt Rempe.
But, yeah, I think, but he's been in the league longer, I guess, and
marginally.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. It just didn't feel like he was.
Just square up with a guy. That's all. I mean, you wanted to fight him.
With Paré.
To square up. That's all. Yeah. Just give him a chance to at least say, you know, I'm coming after you. You took out our $8.5 million score here. You know it's coming. Just give him a chance to say yes or no.
Can I say something that he wasn't exactly quick to get the flippers off with Brady Tkachuk breathing down his throat? So
Jacki?
Yeah. Didn't have much of a chance, but he didn't exactly throw him off quickly. So interesting.
Does kind of love for more must watch TV next Wednesday.
I mean, we're all the same. I love this. Like, I love hockey like this.
Yeah.
But I think it's hard for the NHL to try to sell that it's not this all the time with, like, they're like, you know, we care about the player's health and all this stuff. When it, and then it's just in preseason games, guys are throwing flying elbows and nothing happens.
Maybe they've decided they want more of this. And
good.
I
love it.
Just make the statement. In a way, they have made the statement.
They have. They absolutely have. You know who else made a statement? The Wild owner.
Okay. I like this one.
Okay, would you like me to read what the owner said?
Please do.
Okay. Craig Leopold. We plan to resign him.
Who's that?
The Wild.
Yeah, but
Kaprizov.
Kirill Kaprizov.
We plan to resign him. I will tell you, nobody will offer him more money than us or longer years. So all we have to do is prove to him that we want to win.
I would love to hear my boss say that. No one is going to pay this guy more than us in terms of years and dollars.
What does Guerin think of those words?
You're the GM of the team going, not helping, man.
They just are still kind of figuring it out with the money lost on buyouts to Parisi and Suter.
How much longer are they doing that?
Oh, this is it. One more year.
I think, this is the
last year.
But you know what? This kind of reminds me of, you were critical today of, I believe, Blue Jays GM Ross Atkins was asked, or was it Shapiro was asked, if Guerrero was a generational player.
Listen, I don't want to do this.
Okay.
Okay. I don't want to talk.
They were asked, is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. a generational player? And instead of just saying yes, they waffled on it. This is the Wild owner saying, stay. We want you. We love you. We'll pay you. Mm-hmm. Unequivocal.
Yeah.
It's not really what it used to be, because a guy like that's going to get 8 years or 7 or 8, you know, if he walks and joins another team, obviously he may not get an eighth year. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, everybody's within the ballpark of a mil and a half for most of these guys. Of course, Connor in a year could ask, or is it 2 years?
Buddy, Connor's not taking in more than Leon.
Exactly, but he could ask for all of 20% of the cap, and you'd have to just say, yes, may I have another, if he insisted. But the rest of them are in a ballpark. It's like not,
Kaprizov's 27. He has 108-point season. He's going to be worth 13, 12.
12, 12 and a half.
Here it is.
Like, it's so funny now. You talk about the baseball and the basketball, and they're like at $400 million, and now it's like, you know, and it's 2024, and Swayman's asking for $500,000 more, and like, oh my god,
this greedy son of a guy.
Joel Embiid got literally $300 million.
I had to ask Sam the other day, like, I watched the NBA a little bit, and I was like, who's this Şengün guy that just got paid $220 million? Şengün, for sure. Yeah, he's famous.
Can you have
the poor man's Jokic? Like,
you know, I'm taking 330. You come to me at 328. We got no deal.
Okay. Who are you bidding against?
Okay.
Hey, you said the Connor thing. Speaking of pumping your own tires, I'll pump your tires for you. For a couple of years, you've been saying that Draisaitl and McDavid, it was going to be $30 million combined.
Yeah.
And I would say that Draisaitl signing for 14 was an excellent start to that theory for you.
Yeah.
So 16 mil next year for Connor?
15 and a half.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It totally depends.
Maybe less.
In Toronto?
If he's generous, but
some people Connor's going to feel, what he's worth.
Let me tell you something, that Connor is going to feel like there's the Edmonton story, mm-hmm. but there's also the NHLPA story.
Yes.
And this is where
the Sid thing, right?
The Sid thing, he gets away with it because he's 37, 38, and it's a different feel. It's a two-year deal. Connor will have a lot more pressure, not just to look after the Edmonton Oilers and his teammates, but to do the right thing, to not undersell.
You got to drive it up.
To a certain extent, yes. And if he wanted to come at them at $17 or $18 million with a $95 million contract, he'd have every right, but I don't think he'll necessarily do that because Evan Bouchard needs his 10, and Nurse is still at 9.5.
Right.
And
but it
is there
hard
more of a killer contract in the league than that Nurse one, Mike?
You know, so I think what my theory was always 16, 14, you know, 17, 13, somewhere, but
it does stink, though, if McDavid signs for 15 or something, and then your Connor Bedard or whoever that's coming up as a big-name center, and they go, well, you can't just get more than McDavid.
You can pull a Swayman and say, I don't give a crap. Pay me. Pay me what I think the market dictates today.
He just won't do that.
He's the last guy in the league that will do that.
Yeah. Who?
McDavid.
McDavid looked at Sid and went, I'm closer to that than I am, you know. Any other guy. He wants to be that. He wants to win.
Take less. He took
only
less on this one.
Teams. It's really hard to be on a winning team.
And apparently Gary said yesterday it's not going to be 34. Like we all thought immediately.
Expansion?
He kind of threw a little cold water on it, but he wasn't. Because everybody was pretty hot.
Gary's thrown cold water on a lot of hot things. And it remained hot.
It hasn't extinguished it?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Yeah. Is Arizona leaving? No. We remain committed.
Utah.
Next day. Bye.
Utah.
Yeah.
And well,
Utah immediately.
Because wasn't there like an announcement that it was going to be Houston and, not Atlanta. An announcement, but like a report?
Yeah.
It's Houston and Atlanta.
Is it?
Barf.
What's his, Anson Carter's like all but said they're getting a team in Atlanta. Like it's a done deal.
And what? At 2 million?
Buh, you mean?
$2 billion.
Yeah.
$2 billion.
I was like, that's pretty cheap. I think we could get enough.
$2 billion, I meant.
I mean, yeah, got to be north of that because I think Tampa Bay was just valued at 1.8.
I can appreciate that there's a marketplace for billionaires, right? Stroking these checks.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know how, on a day-to-day basis, the cash. How you make money.
I mean, none of these businesses make money. Does Uber make money yet?
Uber?
Netflix, they making money? I think they are. But yeah.
I don't know.
But like somebody has to use real cash to keep the engine going here. And good on them if they want this toy that makes no money and makes no sense.
But the thing with those guys is that they believe that the way if like these Uber rich guys like I will be the one that will make it work in Atlanta. I will be the one that makes it work in Houston where they don't care about hockey at all.
I think it's more, I get to say I own a team in the league, and that's all I care about.
You think?
I don't care if we lose $20 million a year.
Well,
20's a lot.
I want a friend like that.
Yeah, you got a couple.
I don't get to hang out with
him. I saw you in Ottawa sitting by Bill Burr during the owner fiasco.
This guy played golf with Rafa Nadal. He's like, I wish I had a friend like that.
There's none in this room.
That's for sure. Oh, my God. Well, another show in the books here, boys.
Is that two in a row?
Yeah.
Well, we're on a roll.
That's how we got
And tomorrow, you and I are on the Leafs broadcast on the television game.
And is that a home game that we're doing for the Leafs?
Yep. It's in Toronto.
You know nothing.
It's in Toronto.
I'll do my research.
Pay more attention than
me. I pay attention.
The one thing I told you 4 years ago, just pay more attention than me.
The bar's so low, Kip, I do.
All right. Our thanks to Jason Bukala, former NHL head scout. Does a terrific job, not only on our show, but on Sportsnet as well. All right, Sammy, JB, what's up for tonight? More baseball for you?
Wanted to watch The Penguin, the new series.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So maybe starting that tonight.
I thought that was a Pittsburgh thing. But
no. All right. If you get a chance, download us or watch us on YouTube. Give us a rating and review if you also get a chance. Have a great night, everybody.